We are going to start the Dhamma sermon of this mindfulness for young adult session. We were discussing Munisutta. As we know, Munisutta is available in the Sutta Nipata, one of the ancient books where very interesting sermons of the Buddha is collected. And we went on from verse to verse. And last week actually we discussed about how a kind of a rebirth happened. So what are the necessary conditions? So consciousness operate like a seed, and they are, so for that seed alone can't do the whole thing. So it needs karma as the field and then craving as the moisture. So when all these conditions are available, then the seed can grow properly. It can become a huge tree. So similarly, the consciousness also require that kind of a field, that is the karma, or past karmas are there. And once we are born, we are accumulating new karma also, that is also there. And again, fair amount of craving coming from the past is also available. So that is giving the enough moisture, water, and then it is growing. Now that we already discussed last week, and now we can get into the today's topic. So let's go on to the today's one. Anyaya sabbani nivesanani anikamayang anyatarampi tesam save muni vita gedho agiddho nayuhati paragatohi hoti. Now each and every term here is giving a very interesting and deep meaning. Anyaya sabbani nivesanani. So that means having a full understanding about various kinds of residences, various kinds of abidings. Anikamayam anyatarampi tesam. Not desiring any of them. Now he understood various residences, but he doesn't have any desire for them. Save muni vita gedho agiddho. And who is truly a muni, devoid of greed. Nayuhati. Paragatohi hoti. So he is not accumulating. He is not gathering things. Nayuhati. Paragatohi hoti. And he has crossed beyond. Or he has gone to the other shore. Now, if we little discuss about this verse. Anyaya sabbani nivesanani. Actually, what is a nivesana? What is a house? What is a home? So typically we know that everyone needs a home, even a monk needs a kuti, a hut, maybe a temple, even a layperson needs such a kind of a dwelling place. So we all know that everyone needs a residence. But in the deep term, in the deep sense, that is not the kind of mundane residence that is meant here. What is meant here is that residence for a consciousness. So Buddha mentioned in various suttas like Upaya Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, or rather in the Kanda Samyutta. So Buddha mentioned consciousness either needs form as a residence, as a home. It requires its association. It requires it to be attached with it. Or either it needs the feelings, either it needs various perceptions, signs, or it needs various kinds of sankharas. So in general, we can say for the consciousness, there are four houses, there are four homes, there are four residences. So having understood all those residences, having known all those residences. So this here, as I mentioned, these residences are not merely physical residences that we are talking, rather in the deep sense, how consciousness time to time dwelling in a form realm. Dwelling in the form residence, attaching to a form, holding a form, grasping a form, being residing on a form, keeping form as a footing, and keeping form as the object, and attach to that, grasping that, adhering to that, maintaining some kind of a standpoint with respect to that, and even having a latent tendency with respect to that. So that means a home residence, form residence. And not only that, then Buddha mentioned වේදනා උපයංවා භික්කවේ විඤ්ඤාණං තිට්ඨමානං තිට්ඨය වේදනාරම්මණං වේදනම් පතිත්තං නම් දූපසේචනං බුද්ධින් විරූල්හිං වේපුල්ලං ආපජ්ජය ඉන් ද උපේ සුත්ත බුද්ධ මෙන්ෂන් that means when there are feelings, suppose it's a pleasurable feeling, happy feeling, so we being bound to that, we start attaching to that, we being attracted to that, we are holding that, we are grasping that, and we desire that, we want more of that, and we are adhere to that more and more. When we are associating that, there are tendencies being grown in our mind with respect to that. So that means different kinds of feelings can become a home to this mind in proper terms, into this consciousness. So consciousness either need a form as a residence, consciousness either need a feeling as a residence. Even when we are going through a painful feeling, so we start thinking about it, we start proliferating about it, we start worrying about it, we want to get rid of it. So likewise, there are many, many operations are going on with respect to that, say, the physical pain even. And even when we are mentally worried, sorrowful, grieving, and that it becomes a kind of a habitant for the consciousness. Now consciousness is associated in that painful feeling, that worrying, that sorrow, again and again dwelling there, again and again thinking about it. So the feeling can become a home. Similarly, the consciousness can take various perceptions as a form. So assume that you have seen someone and certain signs are registered in your mind. Certain marks are registered in your mind. And now you are associating them. Now you are thinking about them. To those little marks, you are appointing a person. You are attributing a person. So likewise, so all these different situations aggravate mentality, aggravate thinking, various kinds of processes. Now you take those images for granted, those images as real, true. Now mind or the consciousness has a footing. Consciousness has enough food, a good place to dwell, a good house to remain, a residence to remain. And on the other hand, the fabrications. When we start thinking, so the thinking is another process where the consciousness find footing. So again and again we start thinking, various thoughts are happening, and we start more thinking, and we are thinking in many directions. It's now kind of diversified type of thinking. Now the magnitude of thinking growing, and we even get overwhelmed by thinking. So that is a huge home for the consciousness to lie. Consciousness to remain. It's a good residence for the consciousness to remain. So having known all residences, so that means this deep understanding how consciousness is working, how consciousness is dwelling, how consciousness is associating either form aggregate or either feeling aggregate or either perceptions aggregate or the fabrications or the formations aggregate. Rupakkhanda, Vedanakkhanda, Sanyakkhanda, Sankarakkhanda. So these different aggregates can become a very good residence for the consciousness. So the Muni, the Buddha, the Arahant have understood this fully. All these residences he understood. So how a consciousness may use a form as a footing, feeling as a footing, perception as a footing, formations as a footing. And now what he do, Anikamayam Anyatarampi Tesam. And now he is not desiring any of these houses. He is not desiring any of these residences. Now that means he is leaving these residences. He become homeless. So the consciousness is homeless. The consciousness doesn't associate the form residence. Consciousness doesn't associate the feeling residence. Consciousness doesn't associate the perception residence. Or it does not associate the fabrications or formations residence. It is a homeless state now. Save Muni Vita Gedo Agiddo. Now he has no greed to any of these residences. He is not happy being in a residence. Rather he like to be free, freely moving, floating like. Where there is no footing. So that is why in the terms appatitita vijnana, unestablished consciousness, there is no footing for the consciousness. So it's very much like a freed consciousness, unattached consciousness, unbounded consciousness. So the muni, the, in real terms, so this is the kind of direction that Buddha is showing, where one has become completely free, not being bound by rupa as a residence, as a cell we can say, as a prison we can say. Not being bound by the feelings as a residence, as a cell, as a prison. Not being bound by the perceptions as a prison. Not being bound by the formations as thoughts, various intentions as a prison. Now, he has no kind of a greed for any of these residences. Nayuhati. As a result of that, he is not accumulating any of these. Typically, whenever we are grasping things, so we are more and more accumulating, we are more and more gathering, we are developing a kind of a momentum for future existence, for future lives, future moments. Now here in the deep sense, so he is simply living in the present moment, unattached, unbounded, unestablished, simple, relaxed. And as a result of that, there is no gathering, there is no development of the aggregates. Clinging aggregates. There is no further developments of the graspings. So he is cutting off the graspings. So he is maintaining a mind, a consciousness, which is not established, not associating any home, any residence. Nayuhati, paragato hi hoti. As a result of that, now he has gone to the other shore. He has crossed beyond, gone beyond. Now you can see in this whole sutta, so Buddha is explaining Dhamma with very concise way. So we need fair amount of other support coming through the other suttas as well as from the practice in order to understand what really Buddha meant here. So what is this nivesana? What is this, how the Buddha's mind become anivesana or aniketasari? So even today morning, actually, we discussed this in the Halidhakani Sutta, available in the Sanyutta Nikaya. There are one householder called Halidhakani. He approached Venerable Mahakachana and he asked some similar question. So in the Sutta Nipata, in the Magandhya question, Magandhya's question, so Buddha has preached some similar thing. Okam pahaya aniketasari. So that is something that Buddha mentioned even here in the Halidhakani Sutta. I have referred that on the very first day. Okam pahaya aniketasari. So that means the consciousness has left the home. Now Buddha is kind of a homeless in that sense. So that is the deep meaning. It doesn't mean that he has left the Jetavanaramaya or he has left the monastery. Rather, his consciousness is not limited, is not bound, not being imprisoned to a particular home, to a particular prison, to a particular place. Rather, he is a person with aniketasari, where the consciousness not associating anything, not holding anything, not attached to anything, not bound to anything, not confined to anything. So that's why here it is mentioned in the Halidhakani Sutta given by Mahakachana, Arahant Mahakachana, Rupa Dhatuko Gahapati Vinyanasa Oko. So this rupa aggregate, the form aggregate, becomes kind of a house, home, type of a prison to the vinyana, to the consciousness. Now, when we are talking about the Buddha, so Buddha has abandoned attachment, he has abandoned craving, he has abandoned all the desires. Now his mind is completely free, completely pure. As a result of that, his consciousness is not bound by the form, not bound by the feelings, not bound by the perceptions, not bound by various formations. Rather, he is maintaining a very pure consciousness. And there is no greed at all. And as a result of that, there is no gathering, no ayuhana, there is no accumulation. Rather, he is scattering the aggregates. So his mind is not established on a kind of a lustful engagement, lustful footing. Rather, mind is maintaining a very relaxed, floating type of experience, we can say. Then the next verse, sabbabibung sabbavidung sumedham sabbesu dhammesu anupalittam sabban jahang tanhakkaye vimuttam tang vapi dhira munin vedayanti. Now, as I mentioned, so here actually we can understand what a kind of a deep sense that the Buddha is giving to an arahant. Now, here muni means arahant or the Buddha. So, there Buddha mentioned sabba bibhung. So, he understood everything and has overcome everything. Sabba vidum, that means he has known fully sumedha and he is a wise person. Sabbesu dhammesu anupalitta. Now, since he understood fully, he has a better understanding, he understood really well. As a result of that, he is not tainted and he is not attached to anything. He is not holding anything. He is not grasping anything. Sabban jahan, and he has left everything out. He'll cast off all. He abandoned all. Tanhakkaye, and he has completely destroyed the craving. Vimuttang, now he is free, liberated. Thangvapi dhira muning vedayanti, and he is the wise person, a muni, you better know. So we can see, I mean, we may not be able to immediately become an arahant, immediately become a Buddha, and you as lay people feel little, you know, difficult when these kind of very profound teachings are being said. But the direction of the teacher, Buddha as our teacher, Buddha as the spiritual master, we can see what a direction that he has taken, what is an example that he has taken. And even the arahants, what is the kind of an example through their lives that they have shown. And it's not merely become homeless. And I mean, the homeless life does not mean here simply that you leave your, say, job, or you leave your house, you leave your typical householding things, and you come to a monastery. So that is simply a mundane or conventional type of home you are relinquished, or you simply renunciated. And while after coming to the monastery, probably you may bound to the monastery. You may attach to the monastery, you may attach to other, your kuti, your hut, your temple, or whatever available in the temple. If so, then you are not really a homeless person. The deep, real meaning of the homeless person is where you are trying to maintain a consciousness which is not having a footing, not being bound by lustful attachment to the form element, to the form aggregate, to the feeling aggregate, to the perceptions aggregate, to the fabrications aggregate, formations aggregate. So that is the deep meaning. So that doesn't mean, now you can understand in this Halidhakani Sutta, as I mentioned earlier, the Halidhakani is a householder. So he is coming and asking about the deep meaning of this verse from Venerable Mahakachana. So the Halidhakani being a householder, asking a very deep question. So that means, Venerable Mahakachana explained the whole thing to householder Halidhakani. That means even during the Buddha's time, there are individuals maintaining or leading a household life. Still, they had a very deep meaning about the Buddha's teaching. So that is why he is asking one verse which is available in the Attakavagga of the Suttanipata from an eminent arahant. So he want to know that. He want to know the deep meaning. He understood that what Buddha mentioned is not mere leaving home. Rather, what is the deep meaning of that statement? It is not that you are leaving the physical home, but your consciousness is not associating, not having a footing, not being bound, not attached, not grasped to the form element, to the feeling element, to the perceptions element, to the formations element. There the consciousness is freed. There the consciousness is completely liberated. And there that understanding is available with the Muni, with the Buddha, with the Arahants. So they understand how this consciousness is operating. So that is the wisdom. You know, as we are practicing our meditation, say for example, suppose you are practicing Dhatu Manasikara. So that is where you understand how the consciousness is associating the form element. In the Kayanupassana, the main area of our study is the form element. So we are understanding what is this, say, earth element, what is the operation of the earth element, behavior of the water element, behavior of the air element, the heat element, etc. So that means we are examining, investigating the form element. So what happened as a result of that investigation is that we are developing kind of a dispassion towards the form element. So this deeper understanding of the particular aggregate leads to a dispassion in the mind. Now the consciousness become dispassionate about the form element. Previously it is being attracted to the form element because of the avijja, because of the ignorance. But as a result of the practice, vipassana practice, so the consciousness start building up fair amount of wisdom. Now when the wisdom is available, instead of passion, now it has the dispassion. Instead of attachment, instead of grasping, it starts relinquishing. It starts abandoning. It starts letting go. Now there may be a possibility, okay, the consciousness is not associated to the form element. It doesn't want to associate to any of the form element. Any of the characteristics of the Patavi Dhatu, Apo, Tejo, Vayu, earth element, water element, fire element, heat element, it doesn't want to associate, rather it prefers to be alone, maintaining kind of a seclusion, becoming independent, becoming free, becoming liberated. So you can see even at the level of Kayanupassana, the direction is given to build the necessary wisdom through the wise investigation, and later with that momentum, mind become free. The consciousness become not associating residence, because it understood its true nature. It is how vulnerable the form element is, how impermanent the form element is, how unsatisfactory the form element is, and the form element, how much it is beyond our control. So the anatta, the non-self. All these, when the form understanding is growing, now it relinquishes. It's a very kind of a natural effect. It is not that you are pushing away or you are suppressing. Rather, the understanding helps to abandon naturally, let go naturally, relinquish naturally. Now the mind is freed. But the problem is then probably the consciousness go and attach with the feeling. So that is where sometimes we need the Vedana Anupassana to understand the true nature of the feelings, how impermanent they are, how unsatisfactory they are, and how non-governable they are. So when you have that understanding, then even the feeling aggregate is abandoned, is relinquished. Now consciousness does not even depend on the feeling aggregate, because it understood. No point of attachment, no point of grasping, no point of holding. Now even the perceptions aggregate, when you are practicing Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, then that understanding is growing. How transient is the, say, the formations, these thoughts, how transient they are. It is completely insubstantial. There is nothing worthy of attaching to those thoughts. Thoughts are not mine. Thoughts are not me. Thoughts are not myself. And thoughts are merely thoughts. They are fabrications. And when you have that deeper understanding, you feel disenchanted towards these thoughts, towards various signs happening in the mind, and even towards various perceptions. And you don't take them as a reality. You don't take them as true. Rather, you understand, okay, they are quite deceiving, deceitful. They are not the true. So as a result of that, now consciousness is slowly abandoning, slowly relinquishing. Now it is leaving the home. It has left the prison of the form. It has left the prison of the feelings. It has left the prison of the perceptions. It has left the prison of the formations. Now it is freed. All four prisons it has left. All the residences it has left. Now that is the true mindset of the Muni, the teacher, the Buddha, the Arahants. So therefore these verses are really interesting, and more we explore, we get a lot of encouragement. And what the Buddha is in that sense, what a real Muni is. So what the kind of a depth is available to the teaching. So even though we may start with very basic practice like left, right, rising and falling, or in breath, out breath. So this is the very beginning. But it will take us to a very beautiful direction where slowly we are leaving the residence. The consciousness is leaving the prison. It is being freed from the prison. It is being freed from the form prison. It is being freed from the feeling prison, the perceptions prison, and then the formations prison. So this is what I like to share today with you with respect to the Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
We have 6 questions today.
Right.
First question, it's a general question. Dear Bhante, can you explain what is Yoniso Manasikara and how it can be conducted from the mindfulness perspective? Some time back, I understood Bhante's guidance as we should not use thoughts or mind-made thought patterns to analyze anything beyond the present moment observations. Even that present moment observation, reflection should be done after the practice session. If we should not contemplate anything beyond the present moment observations, how can we do Yoniso Manasikara? I may have misunderstood. That's my question. Much merits for this valuable program, Bhante. That's the other question.
Yeah. Actually, Yoniso Manasikara does not necessarily mean thinking. So it has a very wise reflection or wise attention where you are going to the source like. But it doesn't mean that we neglect complete wise thinking. Wise thinking is also, we can say, a part of Yoniso Manasikara. So that is being highlighted in the Sabbasava Sutta, where Buddha mentioned that you know what you need to think. You know the Yoniso Manasikara. You know what is useful. You know what is beneficial to think. So the yogi is thinking what is beneficial, and particularly he is highlighting the Four Noble Truths. And you are investigating what is suffering, what is unsatisfactoriness, what is the cause of suffering, and how to relinquish suffering, how to abandon craving, and how you are accomplishing that as a Noble Eightfold Path, and how to realize the freedom from suffering. So likewise, there's a certain amount of reflection involved. But in the mindfulness practice, so the wise investigation is highlighted where you are maintaining your attention, very sharp attention to various different phenomena. Suppose you are practicing Kaya Anupassana. Say then you are keeping your attention precisely to the present moment phenomena, like hardness, softness, whatever that element characteristic, for example. And there you are investigating how it is arising, how it is changing, how it is disappearing, falling. And there it is not that you are being carried away by thoughts, you are not being carried away by various perceptions. Rather, you are maintaining a very unbiased, precise kind of an attention, and you are trying to understand what's really going on. So yeah, you do the wise investigation. So that is part of your Yoniso Manasikara in the mindfulness. And later, probably you can even get into the Patisamuppada. You may be understanding how dependently things are happening. Nothing is independent in the typical causal realm, in the typical, fabricated realm. So all the results are dependent on their different causes. Say, for example, when feeling happens, how feeling is dependent upon the contact. So different kinds of contact conditions the tone of the feeling. Say when you are stepping on a very soft surface, okay, it may produce a soft sensation, soft feeling. When you are contacting a gross surface, maybe you feel a kind of a gross sensation, a gross kind of a feeling. If you are in contact with very, say, a hot, burned kind of a surface, okay, you start feeling pain. So that means either the pleasant or happy, pleasurable feeling, or either the painful feeling or the equanimous feeling is fully dependent on the contact. And again, when we are desiring, so that desire is dependent on the feeling. So likewise, you are doing kind of a wise reflection, wise investigation, even at the level of the Patisamuppada. So that comes under the wise investigation or Yonisomanasikara in the mindfulness practice. So that is quite necessary. It is not that we are simply being mindful and, maintaining a relaxed mind. That is also part of it. But during your investigation part of the practice, so you need to spend fair amount of time investigating all these different situations, understanding their true causes and how these causes are conditioning the next result, how these next results are conditioning the next result. So likewise, you are getting a better understanding. So that is the Yonisomanasikara that we are talking in the mindfulness practice.
Question number 2 of 7, this is mindful walking. Venerable Sir, my walking path is a 30-step corridor having a rough carpet. I observe hard and soft touch on the soles and how pressure applies, as well as the lifting, pressing and moving forward movements. I can observe 10 to 15 rounds without much distractions. When I feel calm and be mindful, When I feel calm and mindful, automatically I start getting lost in thoughts. I realize this after a few minutes. Then I come back to the walking again. How can I catch this early when my mind starts to slip at the first instance? With metta, that's the another question.
You may get the ability later as your mindfulness refines. I mean, the strategy is to further and further doing the investigation. The investigation means this physical phenomena. Say when you are mindful, you do a very precise kind of investigation to the present moment phenomena. Say you are recognizing what are the details available in your touching sensation. So it is a single touching sensation, or there are a little group of touch sensations. So likewise, you are improving that very precise investigation. So that helps to refine your mindfulness. That helps to develop your clear comprehension. And later, that helps you to understand when mind quickly shift to another object. So when mind has less object to attach, to hold, then automatically mind shift to thinking process. But when you are developing mindfulness, your attention become very sharp, your mindfulness become quite sharp, refined. As a result of that, you will be able to understand when this shift happened, and most probably even this shift may start not happening because you are quite attentive. So this shift or your distractions to various thoughts become less and less because you are fully aware of the whole process. Even when if your mind drifted, shift to the thought process, you can quickly understand that, and if you want, you can quickly return back as well.
Question number 3 of 7. This is mindful sitting. Dear Bande, I have practiced mindfulness a few years, managed to build a daily practice and practice in a retreat once a year. Last 10 months due to work changes, I could not do much and I was lucky to participate in the recent NVE retreat. I could feel the difference in not doing a continued practice. It was very difficult to focus my mind for multiple session practice until the 4th day of the retreat. Basically, I was struggling most of the retreat time, even though I knew what to do and the techniques. And I have experience for many years. I have realized one value of keeping up the practice at least just enough until we get the chance to dedicate more time. My question is regarding the durability of the practice. I initially thought it will be like a life skill, similar to swimming. whereas I can start from the place where I left mindfulness? Or is it something we have to re-practice again and again to keep it renewed, similar to learning a foreign language with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, very interesting question. So actually, Buddha has given a very interesting simile with respect to this, where he say, during the good old days, you are using two dry sticks to generate ignition, to kindle fire. And you need to keep rubbing it together for a considerable period of time. You can't take a rest, because this rubbing is the where the momentum gathers, the heat generated, and that heat has to be further and further continue, and then only the ignition can happen, the kindle can happen, the fire can happen. But if you stop in between, then actually you have to return back again. The heat generated has dissipated to the environment. You have to start from the beginning very much. So it depends on how quickly you have returned. Assume that you have stopped for a while, but if you quickly return, okay, still a fair amount of heat still available, still retaining, then you can start from that point. So similarly, till we are coming to a fair competency in handling our mind, we require fair amount of practice, fair amount of continuous practice. Later, probably once you are fairly developed, where you can quickly keep your mind without attachment, without grasping, without holding anything. So when you are confident in doing that, probably you can take a little rest, but that doesn't mean you are ignoring the practice. By that time, actually, your life has become a practice. Jeevitema bhavanavak vela. That means your whole life has become a meditative life. Even though you do various other activities, even you are engaged with various other activities, while you are doing them, still you are continuing your practice. Currently, it's very much like different. Say, while you are engaged with various other activities, you are completely ignorant and you are completely unmindful. You forget about the practice. But later, the practice become part of the life, and while you are engaged with various other activities, you are being mindful. You know how to handle things mindfully. You know how to think mindfully. You know how to reflect mindfully. You know how to drive mindfully. You know how to write mindfully. You know how to talk mindfully. So likewise, very much like the practice has become part and parcel of your whole life. So at that time, maybe not having many sessions of sitting, many sessions of walking doesn't matter, because you know how to maintain mindfulness during the daily activities. So it has become part of yourself. So till that happens, actually we need the support of a sitting, regular practice, walking, etc. It's required. So such kind of a formal practice is helpful to gather the momentum.
Question number 4 of 8. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, what's the meaning of blank status during sitting meditation? That's the end of the question.
You know, actually, it depends on where you are. So sometimes people misunderstand blank status as kind of where you being completely lost, you being completely unknowing, and then you being blank, you being unconscious. But more than that, it proper say emptiness is where you are encountering no self or no fabrications, no graspings, no tensions, no stress, and no stains of the perceptions, no stains of the various signs, no any kind of fabrications. So that is the blank status in the proper terms. That is the emptiness in proper terms. That's a deep thing. Actually, it is not, we should not take the, you know, the typical mundane kind of blank state wordings. It will give a negative connotation. Rather, it has a very deep, rich state, where you are free from any defilement, you are free from any attachment, you are free from any grasping, you are free from any stress, free from any stains in the mind. Mind is completely purified at that moment, at that state. And there is no eye-making, mind-making. There is no grasping. So that is a kind of a very rich state. Even though we simply call it as a blank state, it's a really devaluing term. But the state is a really a rich place, or very healthy state of the mind, we can say.
Question number 5 of 8. This is a dumb sermon question. Excuse me. Dear Bhante, regarding the explanation of karma, is the field, consciousness is the seed, and craving is the moisture. How can we understand the situation when one becomes enlightened? Common thinking is that craving moisture is not there, but there can be remaining karma, the field, and consciousness seed for action, which is not clear. Appreciate Bhante's explanation with metta. Yeah, I'm not sure if the question is
clear. Yeah, very interesting question. So I feel, as you properly mentioned, craving is not there. So as a result of that, no more feeding happens. And the term, the bija, even the consciousness, is not the typical established consciousness at that level. So that is what we need to understand even in today's Dhamma sermon. So the consciousness is no more associating a field, no more associating water. It doesn't have water. It doesn't have food. It doesn't have any water. So the consciousness what we are referring is the conditioned consciousness, the karma-dependent consciousness. A consciousness which is associating form, feeling, perception, fabrications or formations. But at the enlightened level, according to the Buddha's teaching, there is another level of consciousness which is unestablished, which is not established at any place. And it is not entangled to the name and form, to the nama rupa. And so that is the area that Buddha is referring as the enlightened consciousness or anidassana vijnana, where it is not manifested. There are no name and form representing in such state. So mind is utterly freed. So at that time, Buddha mentioned that the previous conditioned consciousness has completely ceased. Vijnanasa nirodhena. That means that previous conditioned consciousness has completely freed. If you can remember in the Ratana Sutta, there's a very beautiful verse coming at the end. Kinang puranang navang natti sambhavam viratta citta ayatike bhavasmi te khina bija avirul hi chanda nibbanti dhira yathayam padipo. Kinang puranang. Now the old karma has been very much like eradicated or abandoned, dissipated. Kinang puranang navang natti sambhavam, and he is not generating new karma. Navang nati sambhavam. Viratta citta ayatike bhavasmin. Now he is maintaining a mind state which is dispassionate, not involving, not passionately involving, not lustfully involving, not desire, not governed by the desire, not influenced by the desire. That is how he is maintaining his life. Viratta citta ayatike bhavasmin. Te khina bija. Now that bija, that seed of consciousness, that conditioned consciousness has completely eradicated. Tekhina bija, avirul hi chanda. And there is no chanda, desire for future birth. Nibbanti dhira yathayam padipo. Like a lamp being extinguished, that wise person, that arahant, has attained Nibbana. So you can see all these things are very beautifully connected in that Ratana Sutta verse. The karma has abandoned, he is not generating new karma, and he has crushed the conditioned consciousness, the bija, the seed. And again, he is maintaining a very beautiful life, a pleasant life, not generating any kind of a desire. And that is being represented even in the Ratana Sutta.
Question number 6 of 8. This is again Dhamma Sermon question. What makes the consciousness be tricked into seeing or thinking as a self, seeing the world as me, myself, and I? Also, is consciousness just a form of energy that keeps changing through karma in samsara until it is purified, free of greed, hatred, and delusion? Thank you, Bhante. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think the desire is one thing, craving is one thing, feeding the consciousness, helping the consciousness to establish, as we already discussed, as the consciousness as a seed, so the moisture coming as a supporting condition. And karma is also there as a field, always generating a kind of a field to get the nourishment. And again, as a result of attachment, the desire, craving, it is continuing. So that's why even in the certain other suttas, Buddha mentioned, so in the Majjhe Sutta, that's a kind of a definition given. When, for example, when I and form is coming together, the consciousness is generated, that is probably being influenced by the craving. As a result of that, now it is being established there. Now again and again, this I consciousness is operating, generating, and we forget about that, we being attached to the form what we are seeing, and we being entangled to the form we have seen. But under the carpet, the craving is helping the whole process. The Sibbani, is the one who is hiding this whole process, and we being sort of influenced by that craving, and we being attracted to what we see. But we forget about the operation of the consciousness. So when we are continuing our life, so if we are not having proper understanding, if you are not having proper mindfulness, so there are enough food available for the consciousness. Different tendencies are available in the mind itself to delude us, to promote the karma, to generate new karma, then the continuation may happen.
Question number 7 of 8. And this is again a number 7 question. Dear Bhante, is form or rupa a form consisting of the four elements, or is it a mental manifestation in the consciousness? Also, what is the difference between rupa and sanya rupa?
Sanya rupa? Maybe. I don't know.
Okay, please. Yeah. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, when we are talking about the rupa aggregate, the rupa khanda, it has a broader meaning. So Buddha talks either the gross rupa, it has 11 dimensions. Atita anagata pachyutpanna. That means the past rupa, the future rupa, the present rupa. So that is one area. Then olarika sukuma, that means the gross material and the refined material. Then ajjatta bahidda, the internal material and the external material. And then dura santika, the far away material and the closer material. And olarika sukuma, the refined material or gross material. So likewise, different dimensions are available into the form aggregate. So everything is considered as the form aggregate. So therefore, when we are talking about the form aggregate, everything is included, whatever is physical. But the thing is, when it is coming to the name and form, nama rupa and vijnana, we are talking about the mental part, they are the form, nama rupa, they are the name and form, referred form they are, is the very much like the extract we are getting through the physical world. Now it is very much like a shadow of the gross form. So what is available in the physical world is very much the gross elements, and through those gross form material realm, you get a very kind of an extract of that, and that is generated a kind of a mental impingement, mental extract, a sign available in the name and form in at the level of the mentality. So the consciousness is associating that even at the level of the mental world. So assume that you are through your eyes, through your hands, say you are touching a table. So at that time you have a feeling, you have a kind of a perception, you have a certain thought, everything. So that at that time you are maybe associating the form element. But even when you close your eyes, when you are keeping your hands away from the table, still you can generate a mental image of the table. So that is the name and form that we are at that moment the consciousness is associating.
Question number eight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Question number eight is the last question. It's a general question actually. Dear Bhante, thank you again for your valuable talk. I was wondering how we can live in society according to social norms and expectations without being attracted to form and feeling. For example, while organizing my wedding, there were several things to organize to ensure that the event ran smoothly and nicely, such as flowers, outfits, music, entertainment, food, decorations, etc. I'm a simple person and found it difficult to focus on and spend a lot of money on extravagant and extra things. It all went well, but even after the event, I felt that my family and friends compared the wedding to other ones and what I could have done better. Are there situations like this where we must be materialistic to fit in with an impressed society? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think, we have to live in the society. We don't need to show that we are kind of very special people. We are not considering any typical social norms and we are very special. We don't need to behave like that. We can simply be a commoner. We also can simply follow the typical norms. Doesn't matter. But internally we know that they are merely conventions. We know that they are simply social norms. That's all. And we don't need to have any grudge or we don't need to have any conflict with them. We don't need to even argue about that with others. If they are telling, okay, you need to get the wedding according to the typical social norms, okay, why not? We'll take that, no problem. But we know it is simply a norm. It's a simple recognition. It's a simple convention. That's all. Other than that, there is nothing substantial. So I don't need to suffer thinking about it. I don't need to compare my wedding with another person's wedding. I don't need to worry thinking that I haven't done well or I haven't done it in a grand scale or I have done it on the minimum scale. I don't need to think about it again and again because I have done the best I can and I understood what is the essential parts, what is only necessary and what is my capacity. I don't need to borrow a loan and get the wedding. Rather, I found, okay, this is the best I can do. Okay, I have invited the necessary guests. I have done the best, that's it. No need to think, no need to regret about what has happened. So if you are doing in that manner, no need to have any grievances, any regrets, because you know honestly, okay, I have done the best. I have protected the, say, family reputation, or I have invited the necessary guests. I didn't ignore. Actually, I have taken the wedding. Doesn't matter, no problem. And now I am living happily. And no problem. So likewise, so Buddha actually talks about the convention as well as the understanding. So even when one becomes an arahant, so that's why Buddha mentioned. So he may be using the typical conventions, the normal communication and all these terms, terminologies, conventions, rules, regulations, languages, etc. without much kind of a conflict. Because he know they are utility value. The arahant may know what is exactly they are meant for. That is, they are meant for the social well-being, to maintain a relationship, to maintain someone's, good understanding or whatever it is. But other than that, nothing is there. Nothing substantial is there. You don't need to take that as the reality, that as the truth. Because you know it is mere convention.
So we just right on time today. So I think we will end the program now. Smante is at Kalalgoda and continue with the program there. So I would like to thank Bante for his valuable time and also share the merits with the organizers and all teams who are both seen and unseen who enable this program. I would also like to thank and pass on the merits to the participants for joining the program today, for practicing and sharing their questions. Teruvan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai.